Hello everybody, James here, and it's Ask Dutch Anything. And what that means is you get to ask Dutch anything if I pick the question, quite frankly, or someone picks the question for you. And to ask a question to the Dutchman himself, to submit a question, you write to questionsfordutch@gmail.com. I'll rush through the plugs very, very quickly. Dutch has got a few very limited edition hats that he will sign for you. If you're interested, go to dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com and make your request there, make your inquiry there. If you want diplomas signed from Dutch, if you want books signed from Dutch, then you go to the same email. That is dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com. Not to be confused with submission of questions, questionsfordutch@gmail.com. And a lot of you over the past 5 weeks, I guess, have done that because we were away for so long and haven't done a fan question episode in so long that we had a huge backlog to get through. So, of all those, I picked the best ones, or I think I picked the best ones that I could find. And the first one is from Billy from Kentucky. This will be a very quick one, I imagine. Hello, James and Dutch. I love the podcast and watch it all the time. I am thinking of joining a small independent promotion here locally. If I do, I'm thinking of using the name Filthy Frank Mantel. However, I feel the need to ask Dutch's permission to use it first. May I use the Mantel name, Dutch?
Hell no. Can't use my name? Were you crazy? Well, you can if you give me a little bit of a fee, and I'll make it affordable for you. So you can write me.
Write me at dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com.
Write me there, and I'll say what kind of deal we can work out. Yes, you can use the name because I don't own the name Mantel. I don't even own the Dirty Dutch. I mean, somebody could copyright that if they wanted to, and then keep me from using. Oh, well, nobody would do that, surely. But I did have another show called Down and Dirty with Dutch. And this guy wrote me and told me that I could not use Down and Dirty because he uses it on his show. And it wasn't even a wrestling show. It was actually a truck racing outfit, and he called it Down and Dirty Racing or something, but he said I couldn't use it. But I checked into it. Down and Dirty is a popular phrase, so you really can't copyright those things. So I started to get Stephen P. New. Is that his name?
Yeah.
I started to get him to represent me, but I didn't. So, but I may even write the guy back and said, hey, I'm taking that name back but I have no. And I also used Down and Dirty with Dutch on the Smoky Mountain show. I had a talk segment where I would interview guys in the middle of the ring, go Down and Dirty with Dutch. But yes, Filthy Frank, which is not original, by the way. I've heard that name before. But yes, you can go ahead and use it.
I apologize to the person who wrote this in. Oh, I'm sorry. I've actually found it. It's a guy called Chris. He says, and this actually ties into what you were just talking about. I'm Jamie Dundee's neighbor two houses down, so I'm a little traumatized, he says. But he also wants to say, did Dutch almost use another name since there was another wrestler named Dutch Mantel from a few years earlier? I mean, you were Chris Gallagher at one point, weren't you? Briefly.
Yeah, I was Chris Gallagher at one point. And yes, there was another wrestler named Dutch Mantel, but not Dirty Dutch. Dutch Mantel. And I've talked about him before, but he wasn't a few years earlier. He was like 50 years earlier. And this name was given to me by Buddy Fuller when I started working for him years and years and years ago. And old story of him, and I've told the story before, I don't want to tell it again, but he was a guy from the Netherlands who was a shooter who would go to these county fairs, and he would take on any comer, and people would bet on it. And people that bet on the local guy, of course, he'd cover all those bets. And then he would work an angle toward the last night, where he would set a guy in the audience, a big guy, and he'd have a big, big house for that Saturday night show. And everybody would bet on the big guy because Dutch Mantel, he only weighed like 180, 170, but he knew how to tie guys up. So he would take their big guy in there, and he looked like he was going to win for a while, and all of a sudden he'd just tie him up and beat him. Of course, he was going to beat him anyway because that was a setup. And then nobody had ever seen this big guy that he put in the audience himself. So he would leave the town with probably $1,000, $2,000, which back in those days is like $10,000 or $15,000 or maybe more. And that's what he was known for. But anyway, yeah, there was another wrestler named Dutch Mantel many, many years before I took the name.
Because you wrestled under your real name, misspelt, I think. You wrestled under Chris Gallagher.
Yes.
Ignoring Zeb Colter and Uncle Zebekiah from the WWF runs. Did you ever have any other names when you wrestled in the early days?
I probably did, but I don't remember them. Sometimes you just make up a name on the spur of the moment. I think a wrestler's name is, I can't remember, Blackjack something. I don't know. But I only use it like one time. But Chris Gallagher, I did use that name. Don't tell anybody.
I'll try and sneak it in, but someone asked a question about a certain match between Chris Gallagher and George Gulas, which we may have to watch. It's actually on YouTube. We'll do a live review of it one time. But there is footage of you wrestling George Gulas. Next one is Jesse. If you're doing new episodes, which we are, thank you very much, and taking new questions, here's a classic Lex Luger promo that I first saw in 2006, and it still makes me laugh if I revisit it. So why don't we watch it together? 1 minute. Okay, so we're back. It's not 2006, it's 2004. But I think this fella's just seen it in 2006. But here we go. Lex Luger versus T-shirt. Don't tell me it's not going to load now. Here we go.
Mr. Luger, I saw what just happened out there with Ron Killens. I just want to ask you, I mean, what are your plans for the next show of Super Brawl Saturday? I mean, are you going to take care of Ron Killens?
What kind of disgusting, despicable lack of respect is that Billy What's-His-Name show booking a match for the total package Lex Luger and Super Brawl? Super Saturday? What is it? I don't even know what it's called. What is it called?
Super Brawl Saturday.
Super Brawl Saturday? Can he afford to pay me to wrestle Ron? I don't know. I'm one of the biggest legends and stars ever in this. God! And your t-shirts are too tight too, Billy! And you book a match with me against Ron Killings! Look at me! I'm a total package! I will rip him apart! I'm pissed now!
I don't think I'd...
just before, have you ever seen an announcer, a backstage announcer dressed as some sort of pimp man?
I haven't.
Oh, there you go then.
So right. when was this supposed to be?
2004. It's just some like indie show.
Yeah.
Where they got Lex Luger and Ron Killings out, and Lex Luger did that, and then your t-shirts are too tight too, Billy, is the go home line.
I've never seen that before, but I'm sure they did that again. But that's a good outtake.
I don't think they did. I think they just sent that one out probably.
Well, that was original. I'll say that for them. And maybe they didn't write this promo down for him. Maybe he just did it off the top of his head.
If he memorized that, then that'd be awful. Make it worse.
Lex was too much anyway. What's the name of it? What did he say? Spitzball?
Super Brawl Saturday, and your t-shirts are too tight. And then he starts going, can you afford to pay me? I don't know. Awful.
Where did you get that? Where did you find that?
Oh, that's been floating. Someone sent it in, but that's been floating around since 2004. That's a really famous one. That's almost as famous as, what was that guy? Jumping Jeff Farmer.
I do remember that one too. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Next one.
Yep.
Next one. Mark says, yep. a friend and I were discussing an obscure and forgotten wrestler. Somehow we found ourselves focused on the Angel. Do you have any knowledge of him? And did you ever work with him? Also, do you have a list of wrestlers that time has forgotten but should not be regarded? So the Angel, do you remember that? Was this the French Angel, maybe?
Well, they had the first one. I forgot his name. But he was a weird-looking guy. And I think he was the first one. And there's been a lot of angels through wrestling history. Most of them forgettable. But what was the guy? He looked, he had big hands. And can you find a picture of him?
I can do. He was called the French Angel, Maurice Tillet.
Yep, that's him.
Yeah. Do you want me to bring up a photo for you to
see? Yeah, let's show a photo. Look at there.
That's a kisser right there, isn't it?
Boy, that is. That is too much, man.
I mean, he was way before your time. He died in the 50s, but was he ever on TV?
Oh, yeah. You got two screens over here that shows he's been videotaped, but I don't ever remember seeing him on TV. See, when I was a kid, we had video out of Chicago and Houston. And then it finally, since I was in the Carolinas, we got the regular tape in the Carolinas. But this guy here was scary.
I think he had acromegaly like Andre the Giant, but he didn't get like the gigantism part as in the height.
And he wasn't very tall, was he?
No, he's probably like 5'8 or something like that, so he wasn't very tall.
Anyway, crazy looking.
But yeah, so you actually remember him at the time?
I do remember him.
Was he a big star? Yeah, he was.
What's his name? Maurice Tillet?
Tillet, yeah.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
But I never knew him as Maurice Tillet. I knew him as a French Angel.
You know, apparently Bruce Pritchard owns the death mask of Maurice Tillet. You can see it in the back of some of his old podcasts, which essentially they made a cast, when he died, they made a cast out of his face.
And where did he get that?
From Paul Bosch, I believe.
Really?
Originally, yeah. Paul Bosch must have given it or sold it to him.
Yeah, we got it. Where did I say we got a tape out of? Chicago and where?
Houston. So, perfect.
Houston. Okay, that's where I probably saw him.
Next one. Derwin asks, hi,
Dutch.
Wait
a minute. Yes. What about if I had a death mask, how would you put that in there? You'd have to have that in there.
Yeah, you'd have to have scaffolding for the mustache so it doesn't like get pushed into your face with all the clay or whatever they make.
Oh, yeah, that is correct. You're always thinking ahead, James. Always thinking ahead.
We shall move on. Derwin says, hi, Dutch. Is there some issues between Carlos Colon and Invader? I've seen some clips on YouTube that looks like they have real life beef.
What's the issues between them?
Yeah.
Other than hating each other?
Yeah.
Now, there are some issues between them. Well, first of all, because the Invader thinks he's the star for all those years, he drew all that money, and it was always Carlos like in the main event. And I think they have professional jealousy, for one thing. And I don't think they much liked each other back in the day. They did business together. They got along just for business. But I don't know what the real issue was, other than him doing that horrible deed to Bruiser Brody, and probably an Invader has a big mouth. I think he's went all over that island and badmouthed Carlos. Of course, it's not that big an island, and of course, when somebody sees Carlos, they'll say, "Well, I talked to Invader not too long ago, and this is what he said," and he may not like that. So yeah, they do have some legitimate a legitimate beef with each other.
Yeah, I mean, killing someone would really colour your opinion of somebody, I guess. But was so you said Invader was really the star, or in Invader's mind, Jose Gonzalez.
In his mind.
So yeah, is that the case? Do you think, is he really the star and Carlos the second banana?
Oh, I think he truly believes that Invader truly believes that he was the star. Truly believes that. Very difficult to work with. He wouldn't even, you know, even when you're having a match with him, he wouldn't want to do this and he wouldn't want to do that. And, but he never would tell you. He doesn't speak English that well. He said, no, 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 no. That's the way he speaks. Because even the other Puerto Ricans make fun of the way he speaks Spanish because he butchers it. It's like learning. It's like learning English in West Virginia. You have that accent. So he was way out in the country. I think that's where he grew up. And he speaks like he's a country bumpkin, Puerto Rican style. And he's saying, no, 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 no. Takes the finger. No, 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 no. You, I want to slap him. I've wanted to slap him several times, but I never did.
Just to clarify that, that's not the case, that he's the biggest star. It is Carlos.
No, he's not. No, Carlos drew most of the money. Most of the money.
Now, this next question, you sort of prescient from our Friday episode, but I guess I'll ask it again. Teddy has said, because you were managing him at the time, could you take us behind the scenes to what the relationship was like between Alberto Del Rio and Paige? Was it really that toxic as it appeared to the outside world?
Didn't I cover this on our weekly podcast?
Yeah.
About Paige and Del Rio?
Yeah, kind of.
Hey, I was, Paige was my friend. So she likes my bullshit, and I would talk to her, and I don't think I ever said any word to her about Alberto Del Rio, but they never seemed a compatible pair. They're both like a match and gasoline, because they both got hot tempers, and I think. And I had heard later on that they had some fights and he kind of cuffed her around a little bit and she fought him back and police were called. But when you start hearing that about people, you start thinking, wait a minute, what kind of relationship do they have? And they would never get into it at the arena, but almost. And you can tell there were some underlying feelings that weren't being displayed openly or out in public. But yeah, there was a toxicity about that relationship. You like that word, toxicity? Mm-hmm. That was prevalent. So if I could pick up on it, and I think she even said something about it one day, and I said, well, you need to get yourself out of that situation. So I think she was trying to get herself out of it at the time that it all went down. And that was why Del Rio was let go from WWE, because of that.
He was, wasn't he fired at one point for slapping a writer or something like that at the time?
No, I was at the table that time. Was it a writer? Who was it? Okay, we were all at the table eating. In the, you know, where they serve the food.
Catering. Your favorite place.
It was, and I was there, and one of the writers said something about Del Rio's match or something.
Do you know what it was? I think? It was something like Alberto Del Rio should have been busting the table or something like that.
Something like that. It was that. Yeah. No, somebody came by, I think, and said, you want me to get that? He said, Del Rio will get it. Mm. Oh, it pissed him off. And he got up. not right away, but about 30 seconds later, he got up because he was leaving anyway. He said, I didn't like that comment, this, that, and the other. And he said, you think that's funny? You think that's funny? Because he laughed. I didn't laugh, by the way, because I knew how that would be perceived. And he slapped him almost into next week. Pow. And I think he slapped him twice, one with the right hand, one with the left hand. So, and then right after that, I think Del Rio, they sent him home.
Did the guy go down? But,
no, he was sitting down. He never let him get up and slapped him. That's when I made my exit because, you know, you're trying to leave a hot zone as quick as you can. So I was out of there. Nobody asked me about it because I didn't see nothing anyway. Stay in your own lane. That's what I was trying to do. And he said that because I think he perceived it because he was Mexican. And it was an American guy who said it. So he got slapped.
Who else was there? Do you remember who else was at the table or...
I think Swagger was there, and I think that was it. I think there was five people there that I remember.
Next question. James Warbington. I worked in wrestling behind the scenes, but I also grew up with Shannon Spruill, a.k.a. Daphne, as we were friends up until her demise. Does Dutch have any stories about Daphne in TNA? Also, another person I was friends with is Adrian Street, but we'll stick with Daphne with this one. So any stories about Daphne working with her in TNA?
I just knew her in TNA. I thought she was very good, very, very outgoing, had a great personality, and I never hung around with her. But from my time with her and booking her, she was very, very, like I said, outgoing, friendly. So, and when I heard what had happened to her, I couldn't believe it. It was hard for me to take. So what actually caused her death? Did she kill herself?
Yeah.
Or no?
Yeah.
How did she do that?
She was diagnosed with bipolar disorder in 2003. And says the effects of the concussions had on her day-to-day life were obvious, such as having to cover windows with blankets and bright lights. So she was dealing with potential CTE. On September the 1st, 2021, Spruill streamed a live video through the social network Instagram in which she read a suicide note holding what appeared to be a pistol and requesting her brain be donated to the CTE testing concerns fan took to... She shot herself through the heart to preserve her brain, I suspect, for CTE testing.
That's hard to take. I mean, I didn't know she was... I didn't even know she had that trouble. I didn't know she had that problem. But to me, she was... very, very friendly, very nice, very easygoing. You know, she liked my bullshit. She'd laugh. Of course, my bullshit's pretty funny anyway, so. But, yeah, I don't really have any stories about her. Like I said, I didn't. When the show was over, the show was over. I'm gone back to the room. I don't go to the bar. I don't do any of that stuff, and I go and eat, and I take it in.
There was something else with Daphne I wanted to bring up, and I think she sued TNA over suffering a concussion. This is just very quick Google. It says, during the match, Abyss chokeslammed Daphne from the ring apron through a barbed wire board. Reports at the time indicate she suffered a broken arm, but it was later reported to be inaccurate that she had actually suffered a concussion. And this plays into, sadly, her demise, is that she was dealing with post-concussion syndrome and really, really struggling with it for quite a while. I don't know if you know what happened to cause that final concussion that pretty much ended her career in that sense.
I vaguely remember him doing the power slam. I think, I don't know whose idea the power slam was. I mean, the neck slam, the throat,
the choke
boom.
Slam, yeah. She won an out-of-court settlement in 2013 from TNA over workers' compensation claims she filed against the company 2 years earlier. Their hand was forced when a ruling was about to be made about the validity of TNA's contracts, i.e. the classification of their wrestlers as independent contracts. So they settled rather than suffer a ruling as far as basically all the wrestlers under contract are independent contracts and they don't get, you know, workers' rights like regular employees do. So it was a legal maneuver to save themselves a lot of money in the long term, I guess.
What year was that?
2013.
And when did she pass away? 2020?
2021, yeah.
Well, I wish I had more stories about her. And I am aware of the 2013 suit, too. Because if you read those contracts, there's a joke. It really was. I mean, even the WWF contracts, from the beginning, it's a joke. If you took a lawyer sentence by sentence, he'd pick it apart. Now, this was years and years and years ago, and I'm sure the labor the labor laws have changed, but
probably not.
I like that she won the settlement.
We will move on. John Devers, Mr. Mantell and Mr. Romero. I've heard and read that each state/athletic commission had their own rules for the count outside of the ring or throwing someone over the top rope, etc. Two-part question. Excuse me. Were there ever any problems that this caused in a match when a wrestler forgot the area-specific rule? And were there any really weird rules that a state or city had? Thank you.
Oh, they probably had a lot of weird rules that I wasn't aware of. And some states enforced the rules. Some states didn't give a shit. Some states would send their commissioner over there just to get the registration fee off the guys and to say that he went. And if he sees a match and a guy goes over the top rope, no, he would never. I've never seen it that he would interfere. I do think that up north, in New Jersey, I think in some of those states, they enforce those rules. But they enforce those rules by talking to the referee, not talking to the guys. So if you want to do something, referee said, oh, you can't do that. Why? Well, state regulation. We go, what? We make this shit up as we go anyway. Now the state is telling us what to do. Crazy. I hated going to those northern states anyway, because they would have some weird, weird paperwork for you to go through. And it was just a pain in the ass.
Would it cost more for you to get like a license in that state?
No, the licenses were cheap. The licenses were from like $15 to $25 is all it was. And then, of course, you didn't get it right there. Oh, they'd write you a temporary one, I guess. And then they would send you your permanent one through the mail.
Very quickly, did you prefer 10 or 20 counts outside the ring, and did you prefer the DQ over the top rope rule or not?
It didn't matter to me. See, DQ over the top rope, I mean, it used to be a DQ if you threw somebody over top. Now it's just a spot. You just throw them anywhere. I mean, you can do anything now. Nothing is enforced. Nothing. And I think it would be better if we had just a little bit more enforcing the rules. But how could you see a rule being enforced in, say, WWE, but not be enforced in AEW? I mean, you've been trained. The wrestling fans, they've had, I don't know, 20 or 30 different promotions they've probably seen in their life with no rules. Not counting ECW, they had absolutely nothing. I mean, you could take a gun in the ring in ECW and shoot somebody. Oh, well, that's it. The guy, that wouldn't beat him either. He'd kick out on two. But there was no rules were enforced. and nobody give a shit.
Next one, Orlando. I was listening to your show and a question was asked. Who were the top guys to never win a world title? Maybe I missed his name being mentioned out of all the names listed. But why didn't Michael Hayes get a push? Or was he not championship material? Your thoughts?
Michael Hayes could not go in the ring and do an hour. Not the way he drank. I don't think he pushed ever to be the world champion, because he was the founder of the Freebirds. He had his own idea how wrestling should be done. There was a reason he had two other partners that cut his workload down 2/3. But for him to go in the ring like a Ric Flair, like a Briscoe, like a Dory R. Terry Funk, he couldn't go in there and he couldn't pull you a 30-minute match. He damn sure couldn't pull you an hour match. So he was overlooked because I don't think he wanted it. Secondly, is all, I don't think nobody thought he could do it. As far as a mouthpiece, he was great. He was good. As far as a worker, he couldn't have been a world champion. And I think he would tell you that.
Shane Douglas and I, well, he reviewed the match. He actually wrestled the Freebirds, the new version of the Freebirds, on Halloween Havoc 89, which is the match, show that we reviewed. And I said to, at the first two spots that Shane and Michael Hayes do together, completely messed up. Like, they started and it went wrong. And I don't think it was Shane's fault in that, in fairness to Shane. I think it may have been Michael, because he took a net break completely wrong. Shane went one way, Michael Hayes went the other, and it looked weird. But there was also a bit where there was a clothesline that Hayes was really obviously meant to duck. And instead, Michael Hayes just jumps into it like a salmon, like with his arms like that. And it's the oddest match. Like it settles in. But when I asked Shane what happened there, he went, well, the crowds were booing the baby faces, which was the dynamic dudes for obvious reasons, and they were cheering the Fabulous Freebirds. It threw everything off immediately. Having said that, though, I said, Shane, what do you think of Hayes? As a worker, and giant,
yeah,
okay.
great interview, because he could get heat with you, and he got more heat by not doing of standing outside. Then when he got in the ring, it was obvious Michael's not a great athlete, and he'll tell you that. So. Yeah, Michael Hayes is not world championship material.
No, but an excellent personality there. We can't argue with that. Next one, Dominic. Hey, Dutch. Hey, James. I'm a big fan of your show. I'm from Germany and started watching wrestling in the late 80s. I've got two questions for you. First of all, any good stories about the Freebirds? And what did you think of Michael P.S. Hayes and Terry Gordy? So, he also talks about a couple of other... Oh, Terry Gordy and Steve Williams teaming in Japan. But the Freebirds in general then...
Well, the Freebirds in general was with Michael doing, this is the way Michael told me how he laid the team out. He said he was the mouthpiece. Terry Gordy could do an interview, but he would just be all over the place. And that's the way he did an interview. And Buddy Roberts was the worker. He did the high flying stuff. When they wanted to really beat the crap out of the team, they'd end up it'd be mostly Buddy Roberts taking the high flying bumps, and Michael would do the talking. So they drew a ton of money in Texas under the old system. It was before pay-per-view. These were all judged by live attendance. And when they would go to that sportatorium on Friday night, turn away. Of course, the sportatorium is not that big, but they would turn them away and go to some of those other towns, same thing, turn it away. And the new movie just come out about the Von Erichs. It probably covers that, but the Freebirds were put together for a specific reason. Michael put them together, gave them the name, gave them the music, and That's how he did it.
Joseph says, I saw that on New Year's 1979, you had a loser leave town match with Randy Savage. What brought this on and what was the result?
Okay, there's a doubt in my mind if I made that show or not. Somebody asked me about this not too long ago. And what town was it in?
Doesn't say. Question doesn't say.
So,
what did you do, like pre-leave, before you lost the loser leaves town?
I'd never been to the town before. I'd never even worked in the territory before. January the 1st, 1979. 1978, I worked in the Tennessee territory. But I had left there. I was leaving there on January the 5th. To go to Puerto Rico. And the reason I know that is because January the 6th is Three Kings Day in Puerto Rico, and it was a big holiday. So I know I was home on January the 5th, 1979. But, and I think he just booked the card. I don't think I went to that card. Or he could probably say, or he was using it for publicity. I didn't care what he did. But he can say, we booked Dutch Mantel into this town and he didn't show up.
Ah.
Loser leave town match. I don't know. But that's a mystery card to me. And it is as much a mystery to me as it is to you. But on January the 1st, do you think January the 1st, I would have gotten my car and drove 200 and some odd miles to this town in Kentucky to do a loser leave town match for Randy Savage that I had never even done an interview for. So it doesn't make sense to me. I think it's a bogus card, to tell you the truth.
Do you know who you wrestled the day before? 2 days before? I've actually got a match for you. 30th of December, 1978. Have a guess who you wrestled.
Mexican Angel.
The Fabulous Freebirds. What a callback that was. You wrestled him and you were teaming with the Mexican Angel and you lost to them.
Really?
Yep. And you also wrestled in a battle royal that night that was won by Walter Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It also had Arville Hutto, Bobby Eaton, Butch Thornton, Don Bass, Dutch Mantel, George Gulas, Gypsy Joe, Jim Dalton, Jimmy Rougeau, Michael Hayes, Randy Savage, Rick Sanchez, Rick McCord, Terry Gordy, The Beast, The Mexican Angel, and Tojo Yamamoto.
I kind of remember that. But January the 1st, 1979, I'm going to have to... I wish I had a flag here. I'd throw the flag on it and I'd go, whoop. We got to research that.
Next one. Doug W.
Hey, well, let me ask you.
Yeah.
Maybe we could find somebody who attended that match and let's see if I showed up or not.
Go on then. If anyone happens to be in, where would it have been?
We don't know what town it's in.
No. If you happen to be somewhere in the NWA Mid-America territory. On January 1st, 1979, was Dutch Mantel and Randy Savage there? So someone had to be there, if indeed.
Hey,
it was
I could
a real
have
guy.
Left town before I went to town.
Cheap flights on New thought. Year's Day.
That's a drive. Oh. There's no airports around any unless you get to Lexington.
I was thinking Puerto Rico. You could just a cheap flight on New Year's Day. Whew. Save yourself some money.
Well, I wasn't going to fly out. I was going to fly out of Nashville. Anyway.
Yeah. Right. Okay. We've got a couple more questions. We're going to close this down. Doug W. Knipe. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce your name. Just wondering what kind of music you listen to. Who are some of your fave bands or singers when riding with other wrestlers through all the different territories you worked in? Would you usually listen to the music or ride in silence and talk? When you did listen to music, who had the best musical taste? Who had the worst? Thank you.
What's this guy's name?
Doug.
Nipper? Doug what?
Doug,
last name?
W. Knipp or Knipe.
Knipp. Mr. Knipp, I just got to tell you, we wouldn't listen to music a lot. We would talk. And if we listened to music, we would probably listen to a rock station, a country station. But at night, we would listen to those far-off stations like Chicago or Fort Wayne, Indiana, that had the 50,000 watts that you could get for miles and miles. You know, you could get it like 500, 600, 700 miles away. So, and we would listen to country. We'd listen to rock. We didn't listen to rap because they didn't have it. That's one good thing. And we didn't listen to orchestra music because they didn't have it. So that's the type of music we listened to. I don't know if you want me to be specific, but listen to Three Dog Night. That's going way, way back. Lynyrd Skynyrd, Marshall Tucker Band. That was the type of music we would listen to.
Okay, we've got two more questions.
We'll, you know, but here's Marshall Tucker Band. You've heard of them?
I know one song by them. I can't remember which one it is. I've heard of him.
Marshall Tucker wasn't even in the band. He wasn't even a musician. I think he was a guy that drove the truck. And they just took the name called Marshall Tucker. You need to look it up, but he wasn't even in the band. They just liked the name and they kept the name.
The song I know is called Can't You See?
Yeah, Ganges, that's a good one.
See? Yeah, I remember it. Okay, we've got two more questions left on the script. We might as well ask them both. Zweller, first off, when the podcast gets started back up, we're going to ask this. I hope Dutch is feeling a whole lot better. My question is, what kind of interactions did Dutch have with Mr. Anderson / Mr. Kennedy while he was on his TNA run? Thank you guys for everything you do, and I watch and look forward to every podcast episode.
Mr. Kennedy, he did well. I liked him. Good worker. I liked him. Good interview. And his, he would just come to the back and say, what you got? And we'd give it to him. He said, okay. He'd go work on it, come out, get in the ring, do his job. No problems. Never had any problems with the back. Never had any problems with anybody. Actually, a pleasure to work with. Like that guy.
I remember at one point he used to come out with a t-shirt that said, pro wrestling is real and people are fake.
Who did?
Kennedy / Anderson.
That's an old one.
Hmm.
He actually, I saw that shirt probably 10 years before that. So everything in wrestling is stolen anyway. We're worse than comics. We see something that's, one comic sees another comic tell a joke, he'll go and he'll change it around a little bit, but he'll change it around to fit him, so it becomes his original. I forgot the comics that were going to sue each other for stealing each other's jokes. I think that is about stupid. But I don't know if they won that or not. What's your next question?
Well, I just wanted to ask about Kennedy a bit more. In 2007, 2008 in WWE, seemed like he was heading to the top, and then I don't know if he accidentally injured somebody like Randy Orton, but I think he fell afoul of the wrong person. And then also, I think he popped for steroids as well at that time, and it just all seemed to just go.
No, I think it was Orton. I think Orton had hurt a couple of guys doing something. And I think Orton complained. You know, Orton could hurt people too if he wanted to. But I think something happened with Randy Orton. I think he went in there and laid down the law that he and not working with him. And instead of Randy Orton just taking him out, they just took Mr. Kennedy out of all of it. So that announcing, and coming down the aisle, I kind of like that, but I don't know whose idea that was, but that was actually the best part of it. He was a ring announcer. He was good too.
Mm. Yeah, he had more success in TNA. He would become a two-time TNA heavyweight champion. I don't know, any last thoughts on Mr. Kennedy's booking or just performance or anything like that you want to finish off the show on?
Well, Mr. Kennedy is, he had a clean slate with me. And I never heard of him. The thing with him and Orton are when he left WWE or whatever it was then, I heard the same thing you did. But he never said anything about that to anybody. I mean, I never heard the story from him or whatever happened. But he was getting ready for a good run, and then that happened. Funny, little bitty things in WWF and E can get you gone. And sometimes it's not the guy doing something, it's this. Running that mouth, saying the wrong thing about the wrong person at the wrong time, and then it getting back to the source. Of course, whatever happened here had to get back to Vince, because who was the guy? I may have told this before, Brad Maddox.
Yeah.
I told you that story, yeah, right?
He said pricks on a promo.
And it was a dark promo. And Vince, it just hit him in one of the moods. He was sitting back to the go position. And I was sitting in there too, and he went, "Did he say pricks?" Of course, I didn't say nothing. Stay in my lane. Mm-hmm. Somebody said, "Yes, sir." He said pricks. And then he told the guy, I think his name was, I'll think of it in a minute. It's not Carano. He told Carano, he says, "When he comes back, fire him." Then I come back and I saw Carano take him down the hallway and talking to him. And then I saw him, he had to leave the same way. And then about 10, 15 minutes later, I saw him walking down with his bag. He was leaving. He was fired. Didn't take long.
Oh, outrageous.
Because he was like the, he was like the co-promoter on air. He would do something like that, him and some girl. They weren't using him well, or it was kind of a... But anyway, that's how he got going.
Just to finish up on Kennedy, your Mr. Anderson, unfair.
Is unfair?
Unfairly impacted his career.
He did. Thing. Well, when you get fired from WWE, where are you going to go? I mean... He was probably making, even before the big contract, he's probably making, or he could have made, 200, maybe more. But back in, what year was he fired?
It says 2009 here, I think. So I had it in 2008 in my head for some reason, but around that time.
Well, anyway, that's a pretty hefty job to lose, just like that. And, yeah, it did impact his career. What's he doing now?
I think he's got a wrestling school out there somewhere. I'm just reading, according to Kennedy, Orton also persuaded John Cena to complain about Vince McMahon about Kennedy's in-ring performance, which prompted McMahon to release Kennedy from his contract. So apparently Cena and Orton both ganged up on him.
Well, I hate to hear that, because I think that was unnecessary. But I didn't do it. I had nothing to do with it.
Stay in your lane.
But the ultimate act of it being completed was done by Vince. And Vince was coaxed into this by Cena and Randy Orton, the two top stars at the time. So he either pacified them or kept Mr. Kennedy. So he didn't have much of a choice either.
On that note, we're going to close down this podcast. Thank you very much, everybody, for watching. We'll be back again on Friday. As I said at the beginning, if you want to submit a question for consideration for this show to have me ask Dutch and maybe get it on air, then you write to questionsfordutch@gmail.com. And of course, all of the stuff that Dutch is selling, signed, including the hats and the books and the diplomas. Get in touch with him at dirtydutchmantel2ls@gmail.com. But for now, thank you very much for watching. And Dutch, we the people.
We the people. Let me say one thing before we go.
Oh, okay.
When I went to the hospital, people ordered diplomas and books. And I'm in the process now of clearing that clearing that backlog. But some of the merchandise is late. I apologize for that. There's two ways to cure that. You will get your merchandise, whoever ordered, or I'll give you a refund, one or the other. But it's taken me a little longer to recover. And since I'm the only one doing this, so just bear with me. Give me a little bit more time, and I'll get every one of your orders to you. I appreciate you ordering. And but in the hospital stay, I didn't know whether I was here or there. I couldn't have done anything. So I've been out about 2 weeks, and I'm doing the backlog now. But you will get your stuff. I guarantee it. So, again, we the people.